Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
She had always been afraid of the dark, not in the casual way people joked about, not in the way children outgrew. This fear had weight. It followed rules. It lived in specific places, and nowhere did it feel stronger than the house where she grew up. Even now, at 32 years old, she could not walk through her parents' house without turning on a light. The moment she stepped into a dark room, her body reacted before her thoughts could catch up. Her chest tightened. Her skin prickled. She felt watched, sometimes observed, sometimes hunted. The sensation concentrated in certain parts of the house as if fear itself had learned where to wait. As a child, she accepted her mother's explanation. She was just afraid of the dark. Nothing more. But as she grew older, the fear sharpened into something harder to dismiss. When she was 14, she woke one night convinced that spirits were in her bedroom. The terror came so suddenly and so completely that she curled into a ball on her bed, crying and shaking, certain she was about to be attacked. The fear wasn't abstract. It felt immediate and physical, like something was already in the room with her. 2 years later, something else happened that disturbed her deeply. She began receiving silent prank calls late at night. At first, she assumed it was someone messing with her, but as the calls continued, she noticed something strange. The sounds didn't behave like normal phone calls. They felt closer, as though they weren't coming from outside the house at all. Eventually, frightened and exhausted, she called the police. Nothing was found. Around that time, she remembered something she had almost forgotten. When she was in third grade, she had experienced something she never told anyone about. She would wake up in the early morning hours, caught between sleep and waking, and see a little girl standing in her doorway. The girl's name was Rachel. She appeared more than once, always trying to get her to follow her. The encounters felt calm at the time, almost routine. And she would see the girl in the mornings, not at night. Then, just as suddenly, the girl stopped appearing. Years passed. In her early 20s, she moved into a 3-bedroom house in Pasadena, California, close to her parents' home. A friend's parents owned the house, but lived out of state. Before she moved in, she was warned that strange things had happened there. She didn't take the warnings seriously. That changed quickly. Her friend's brother described cleaning the kitchen late at night, leaving the room briefly, and returning to find cupboards open and items spread across the counters. No one else had been home. At the time, she laughed it off. Then friends began sleeping in the lanai room. There was an old rocking chair in that space, and more than one guest reported waking in the morning believing they had seen an elderly woman sitting in it, softly singing an old patriotic song. Each person thought they had dreamed it. None of them mentioned it until others brought it up first. Curiosity overcame caution. They found an old Ouija board and decided to use it. They told themselves it was harmless, that they were just asking questions. They wanted to know how many spirits were in the house. The answers escalated rapidly, moving from a small number to dozens in minutes. That was when interest turned into obsession. They began reading about Wicca, about spells, about energies. She stood out among the group. She had always been good at focusing intent, making wishes, and watching them come true. When it came time to research the presence in the house, especially what they believed was tormenting one of the roommates, she became the one expected to lead. Her roommate's experiences grew darker. She described waking at night to a dark cloud hovering over her bed. She heard a deep voice. She felt pressure pressing her into the mattress. The episodes repeated. Then came the night of the smoke. A friend entered the house late through the kitchen while no one was home. When the others returned around 2 a.m, the house was quiet and normal, no fire, no smell. They stepped back outside briefly. When they re-entered, the living room was filled with thick black smoke. There was no source, no fire damage, no explanation. That was when she began researching patterns instead of curiosity. And that was when she found a name for what she believed they had encountered. But there was one experience that frightened her more than all the others. One morning, she woke to someone standing in her room near the dresser. She assumed it was her roommate, Christy. She asked her what she was doing there. The figure replied calmly, "I have a sister." That made no sense. Christy had no sister. As the figure moved closer to the bed, she asked again what she meant. "I'm not Christy," the figure said. The anger in its voice rose as it spoke again. "You watch us. You see us." The figure was nearly at her bed when fear finally broke through her paralysis. She never finished that investigation. She moved instead. Moving to San Jose felt like an escape. For the first time in years, she slept without bracing herself for fear. The apartment was new. The roommates were unfamiliar. There was no history there. No memories layered into the walls. No childhood dread attached to corners or hallways. She could walk through rooms without turning on every light. She could wake in the night, not immediately panic. At first, the only strange thing was the timing. She woke often at 3 a.m. It happened so consistently that she began checking the clock before opening her eyes. 3 o'clock. 3:01. 3:02. It didn't feel threatening at first, just odd. She read explanations online, stress, sleep cycles, circadian rhythm. She accepted those answers because they were easy. Then someone else mentioned it. One of her roommates, 4 months pregnant at the time, admitted she hadn't been sleeping well either. One night she woke suddenly and saw something in the room. Something she described as a figure with 2 red fiery eyes. It stared at her, then spoke to her in Spanish. The words frightened her enough that she interpreted the experience as a warning. She believed the message was about order, cleanliness, that chaos invited darkness. Another roommate overheard the conversation and immediately told them to stop talking. He didn't want to hear it. When pressed, he admitted that for months he had been waking at night with a strong smell of smoke in his room every night at 3 a.m. She felt the familiar chill settle in her chest. They tried to respond calmly. They prayed together. They cleaned the apartment. They opened windows and let in light and air. For a while, things felt quieter. Not peaceful exactly, but manageable. About a month later, she woke around midnight and realized the room was dark. The light had gone out. The bulb had burned out completely. Panic flared instantly, but she forced herself to breathe. She told herself it was nothing. Bulbs burned out all the time. She stayed in bed, heart racing, trying to convince herself she was safe. That was when her dog began barking, not at the door, not at a sound outside, at the air. The small dog stiffened, her fur standing on end as she stared toward the upper corner of the room, near the closet and ceiling. The barking was sharp and frantic, nothing like her usual behavior. Following her gaze, she thought she saw a dark shape, something pressed against the shadows, something watching. She screamed. Her body locked in place, fear freezing her limbs, but instinct overpowered it. She grabbed her dog and ran to her roommate's room, sobbing uncontrollably. They prayed together in every language they knew, voices overlapping in desperation. Someone found a new light bulb. The room was lit again. The shape did not return. But the fear did. From that night on, she could not be alone in the dark, not in the bathroom, not in the hallway. She became convinced that something waited just beyond her vision, something that would reach out and pull her back if she wasn't careful. She felt it when she left the bathroom, when she turned corners, when she stood in doorways too long. Eventually, she moved again, and eventually she returned to the place where it had all begun, her parents' home. The fear returned immediately. Not gradually, not subtly. It hit her the moment she stepped onto the property, as if the land itself remembered her. She knew the history of the place now. The house sat on what had once been part of the Gainsborough estate. Her portion of the land had been the old carriage house, where caretakers lived and horses were kept. The stone wall along the street was original, stretching down half the block. The trees were more than 100 years old. Before that, the land had been orange groves. It was old ground. The fear there was different from anywhere else. She could be outside in the dark, anywhere else, without a problem. But in her parents' yard, the darkness felt alive, intentional, as if something watched from the orchard behind the house and something else lingered closer to her parents' bedroom. Those two areas felt separate, carrying entirely different energies. Her dog sensed it too. Sometimes Chloe barked at nothing visible, her hair rising as she stared into empty space. Other times she whined and refused to move, pulling back on the leash when they passed certain spots. Then, about 10 years earlier, she had buried her rabbit in the backyard. Not long after, she woke one night and saw smoke drifting through her room. Then a light appeared. Out of it stepped a man dressed like an old Spanish farmer, white shirt, tan vest, corduroy pants. His dark hair was neatly kept, his mustache curled at the ends. He looked as though he had come from the earth itself, fresh dirt clinging to his clothes. In his arms, he held her rabbit. He didn't speak, but she understood him. Not with words, with certainty. He wanted her to know that the rabbit was safe, that he and others were taking care of it now. She wasn't afraid. The next morning, her mother dismissed the experience completely. Over time, she began to believe that many spirits might exist on the land, that not all of them were malicious, that some were simply there. But that didn't explain the fear. She asked a friend for help years later. He walked toward the orchard and returned visibly shaken. He told her he felt it too. He believed the presence there was that of a small boy who had once played with her, feeding on her fear, and growing stronger because of it. He told her she needed stronger faith, and she already prayed every day. That was the part that frightened her most. Living back in her parents' house felt like stepping into a memory that never faded. The fear there didn't behave the way it did everywhere else. It didn't follow her into other cities or cling to her when she traveled. It stayed anchored to the land, to the rooms, to the spaces that had shaped her earliest sense of danger. That distinction mattered to her, even if she didn't fully understand why. During the day, the house felt ordinary enough, familiar, safe in a practical sense. But as evening settled in, the atmosphere shifted. The yard darkened in a way that felt heavier than nightfall alone could explain. The orchard behind the house seemed to absorb sound as if it were listening. The side of the yard near her parents' bedroom carried a different weight entirely, denser, quieter, more oppressive. She avoided that area whenever she could. Her dog noticed it too. Chloe would stop suddenly during nighttime walks, ears pricked, body stiff. Her hair would rise along her spine as she stared into places that looked empty to everyone else. Sometimes she barked sharply. Other times she whined, pulling back as if she refused to go any farther. Watching her dog react confirmed something she had always felt but never wanted to accept. Whatever unsettled her wasn't just in her head. The memory of the man with the rabbit returned to her often. That experience stood apart from all the others. There had been no fear, no threat, no sense of danger. The man had looked old-fashioned, worn by time, but not hostile. The communication between them hadn't relied on words. It had been calm, reassuring, protective. If spirits existed, she believed then, not all of them were cruel. That belief helped, but it didn't answer the larger question. Why did the fear feel so personal here? Why did the darkness seem to wait for her and only her? She replayed what her friend had told her years earlier, that the presence in the orchard felt like a small boy, that it had once played with her, that over time, it had learned to use her fear, feeding on it, growing stronger because of it. He hadn't said it maliciously. He had spoken carefully, as if choosing his words mattered. He had also said something else that stayed with her. That fear gave it permission. She struggled with that idea for a long time. Not because she didn't believe fear had power, but because she resented the implication that this was somehow her fault. She hadn't chosen to be afraid. She hadn't invited any of it. Still, she couldn't ignore the pattern. The fear intensified when she focused on it, when she anticipated it, when she walked into the dark, already bracing for something to happen. Her body reacted before her mind could intervene, and that reaction reinforced everything she was trying to escape. She began experimenting, not with rituals or commands, but with her own responses. Instead of rushing through dark spaces, she moved deliberately. Instead of holding her breath, she grounded herself in the present moment, the sound of her footsteps, the feel of the floor beneath her, the weight of her body. She spoke out loud sometimes, not in anger or desperation, but in calm assertion. "This is my space," she would say quietly. "I'm not running." Nothing dramatic happened when she did this. No sudden release, no confirmation. But over time, something shifted. The fear didn't vanish, but it softened. It became less paralyzing, less controlling. She still turned on lights. She still avoided certain areas at night, but she no longer felt hunted every second she was outside. Her dog's reactions became less frequent, too. Chloe still barked occasionally, still stiffened now and then, but the intensity faded. The hair on her back didn't rise as often. She settled more easily. That mattered. She continued to pray, not out of panic, but out of grounding. She stopped commanding anything to leave. That approach had always felt like shouting into the dark. Instead, she focused on reinforcing what she wanted to feel: safety, clarity, strength. She also stopped searching for definitive answers. Every explanation she had been given over the years came with consequences. Demons demanded vigilance. Spirits demanded assistance. Faith demanded certainty. Each path carried its own burden. She realized that chasing certainty had only deepened her fear. Ambiguity, oddly enough, brought relief. She didn't need to know exactly what lived on the land to live her life. She didn't need to name it or fix it or save it. She only needed to stop letting it dictate her behavior. That realization didn't come easily. Some nights were still hard. Some nights the darkness pressed in, and she felt the old instinct to flee. But she no longer felt powerless. She reminded herself that she had lived through this fear for decades and was still standing. Whatever existed on that property had not destroyed her, and that mattered more than explanations. Standing in the yard one evening, Chloe beside her, she noticed something quietly important. The orchard no longer felt like it was watching her. It felt distant. Present, perhaps, but uninterested. The darkness near her parents' bedroom still felt heavy, but it no longer felt personal. The fear had loosened its grip. She didn't claim victory. She didn't believe everything was resolved, but she understood something she hadn't before. Not every haunting is meant to be solved. Some are meant to be endured until they lose their power. And power, she had learned, did not come from the dark. It came from how much of herself she was willing to give it. For the first time in as long as she could remember, she stood outside at night and breathed without panicking. The darkness remained, but it no longer owned her.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.